Welcome to the Yeshiva Shalmaila. This is David Lichtenstein. I want to speak about headlines. And we've been in the headlines a lot. And how different communities both in America, we'll speak about Manhattan, New York, Lakewood, Monroe, Eretz Yisrael, Bells, how we're appearing in the headlines. And halachically, as well as hashkafically, how these communities are responding. I mean, before that, I want to note something that I don't think anybody's discussed, an amazing about face in the Aguda, maybe a change in Das Torah. And what do I mean? You know, here's a clip from Reb Eli Brudny about how Klal Yisrael should be acting in Golos.
If we're not in Eretz Yisrael, we're in Golos. We're aliens. And if we'll act that part, and we won't be Oiv Lama Tisrael, and like Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was afraid of wearing a talis on top of his kapota in Williamsburg in the 60s. We have to. So I'm not saying today it's ridiculous in Lakewood not to wear a talis on you. But I'm saying the concept to understand Golos, and there won't be anti-Semitism. And the more we're going to think we're Morakamis here, where we're Shutfim over here with the American system, we're following those assimilated Jews that are going after the president in such a public way that's conducive to anti-Semitism.
Now, this isn't just Reb Eli Brudny's opinion, but it's been generationally decades long in the Aguda. Here's an article as far back as March 1992 in the Jewish Observer from Reb Eli Yishvei. At the time, he was like the Yeshiv Reish in Aguda. And I'm going to read one part of it. Dark clouds on the horizon. That's the title. Very, you know, wouldn't believe when this was being written. Listen to this. We are witnessing an increase in anti-Semitic expression and actions in America. It should provoke us to self-examination. The Jews enjoyed a protected status in Egypt until Yosef HaTzadik died. At that time, the land became filled with them. This is pejoratively. As long as Yosef was alive, the Jews remained in Goshen, honoring the exhortation of Yaakov Avinu, do not make yourself conspicuous among the nations. Bracious Membez Loisisro. And he has continued. Yaakov Avinu's non-confrontational approach continues to be our source how to conduct ourselves in our current Golos. Put the article up online, but that's basically the idea of Klal Yisrael's Kiyum and Golos as being non-confrontational approach. Now, I'd like you to compare. So this is Reb Eli Brudny, Reb Eli Yishvei. Here is the headlines. What are the headlines? Aguda Yisrael of America. Aguda Yisrael of, I'm reading from a complaint and declaratory injunction. Aguda Yisrael of Madison. Agud Rabbi Yisrael Reisman. Rabbi Menachem Pfeiffer versus Andrew Cuomo, governor of the state of New York, in his official capacity, complained for declaratory and injunctive relief. This has been in the news. What did they sue for? They sued, Governor Cuomo came out and he said, 10 people in a minion, that's it. And they sued the governor claiming, you know, it's against religious institutions, it's even though it was against the Catholic Church. And by the way, why did he do it? Because we'll read in an article soon in the paper that the incidence of COVID in Orthodox communities is someplace between 300% and 1,800% of New York at large. That's 3x to 18x. And here, by the way, they went for injunctive relief. The judge threw it out. And here is Shlomi Werdiger, Saul Werdiger, who's a wonderful tzaddik of an Askin. Here's his response to the judges throwing it out.
Good nerve, Yom Tif. Regretfully, we did not get the outcome that we would have liked, but we want everybody to take chizuk. It's the cheshbon of the Rebbeinu Shloimeh, but rest assured that this is not the end of the fight. We will engage further advocacy and will employ every tool at our disposal to ensure that our rights are protected. Our rights are protected in Bote Knesiyos, our rights are protected in yeshivas. Of course, we will do our best to work advocacy that it doesn't have to get to litigation, and try to work with Albany to the best of our ability to come to Psharis that protect our Kehillis and our yeshiva students and all of our moistis. But rest assured, and Albany should know that we are not finished. If we have to litigate, there are Choshev and Balabatim who are stepping up to the plate or offering us to put together a legal fund to do everything at our disposal to make sure that our rights are protected. So the first thing we want to thank the unbelievable Agudas staff who worked tirelessly throughout Chol HaMoed with unbelievable dedication, 24 hours a day, didn't spend a minute with their families over Yom Tov, who really worked with the Toivas HaKlal to see this case through. We want to thank the unbelievable legal team, both in-house at the Aguda, Chaim David, Avram Weinstock, Ami Bazov, and of course, Avi Schick and his dedicated staff at Troutman. And then we want to thank Klal Yisrael for all their support, the dozens, the hundreds of calls of chizuk that we all received during this ordeal, gave us tremendous chizuk to continue. We know, we don't know what the cheshbon of the Ribbono Shel Olam is, but we know that we're going to do everything that's within our power to make sure that we protect our kehillahs in every legal manner that we can. But you must remember one thing, that the danger to our health is real. We must remain safe and vigilant in concert with the directives of the Mietzes Kodei Le'atoiro. So let's use our shuls over Yom Tov to daven for an end to this magefa, and the Begula, Bekarev, and the Ribbono Shel Olam should help that Amit Hashem in the very near future will be back to our yeshivas, our shuls, as it was previously. Good Yom Tov to everybody, and take chizuk that even though this gezerah, this court decision was not what we wanted, but this is not the end. We will continue, and please help us, support us, and daven for us for Hatzlach in the future. Good Yom Tov.
So here's interesting. Rebel Yishvei, Yaakov Avinu's non-confrontational approach continues to be our source, how to conduct ourselves and our current galus. Do not make yourself conspicuous. Aguda today, total about face. We will fight till the last penny. Now, I don't have any opinion, I'm not normal, I stated opinion, whether Aguda's injunction is right, you know, correct, incorrect. I'm just noting the difference of the Lysis Garub Uma. It's a very different attitude. But I would like to comment on another point that I think is very important. There's a concept of Eva. Eva means not to create animosity, animus, between us and our quote-unquote host nation. Here's an article, and there have been hundreds of articles. I just picked up the most current one. New York Times, which is, you know, Reish Farishin L'Sayni Yisrael, how a virus surge among Orthodox Jews became a crisis for New York. This is excerpts from the article. Tensions between the authorities and Orthodox Jewish communities worsen, escalating into the biggest health challenge in the city since the spring. What began as a small uptick now threatens to hasten the arrival of a second wave, they're talking about the Frumma communities, that could cause new hardship for millions of New Yorkers and stall the recovery of a weakened economy. Right, and this has been, by the way, not just here, but in many of the paper, national, journal, news, every place you go. Here's continued the article. The Orthodox communities in New York City, Rockland, that's Muncie, Orange counties, have experienced a sharp increase in cases. The positivity rate of the past week in the town of Palm Reach in Orange, that's Monroe, it says a Satmar enclave, is 18%. New York City is 1.1%. That's 1,800 times. I guess high, it's a good number, maybe. So this certainly rises to the level of Eva when it says we're endangering their lives and their livelihoods. Now, how important is Eva of a halacha? So think of it this way. The Aseres HaDibros, Shabbos is in the Aseres HaDibros, right? When the Yevonim were geyser, they were geyser on Shabbos and Mila. So Chil Shabbos certainly rates as one of the most chumerdika things, right? So here's something interesting. The Chassam Sofer, round, you know, Taf, Kuf, Ayin, which is, you know, basically 210 years ago, in Shalos HaTshuva Chassam Sofer, Chelik, Hei, Simin, Kuf, Tzadik, Dalet, was asked, Kun adakta bi mechal Shabbos for an Eina Yehudi, bi over an Issa Daraisa? And the Chassam Sofer said, Paskins, that yes. He says, very fascinating tshuva. Hecha de ikel lemecha shel sakanta shenachnu dorim beineim v'yosifu sina v'tachros v'yomru ki damoy shel oved kechavim kal beineinu. The blood of an oved kechavim is kal. We don't take their health and lives seriously. What does he say? You should be mechal Shabbos. This is the Chassam Sofer again in Yeridaya. All the current Paiskim, Tzitzel Yezer, Yabi Eimer, and obviously the famous Igros Moshe, where he was asked by a Fruma doctor, can he be Michal Shabbos? He works in a hospital. And Rav Moshe writes for this, Vagam, he says, and even Vagam im hu einei chayshish for himself, yesh lochosh, the words of Rav Moshe, le'eva gedoyla michad anshe hamadina, Vagam hamem shala. V'yesh lochosh le'enei sakala mitaitza. What is the collateral damage this will cause? And then he writes, by the way, this is one of the real few machloikas in, but serious between Rav Moshe and the Chafetz Chaim, where the world clearly goes like Rav Moshe. He writes, upella al hagoyin a Chafetz Chaim in Simon Shin Lamed, where he paskins that a doctor is not Michal Shabbos for a guy. And he writes that everybody argues on this. Well, we have a long history of, and that's how the world, so both in America and in Eretz Yisrael, where you have Arabs and Fruma doctors, we paskin like the Samsoif in multiple places, like the Tzitz, the Abiyah, and like Rav Moshe. So a Michal Shabbos because of Eva. Now the injunction, pre-Simchas Torah, is to allow shuls to be open for minyanim on minyanim, right? Which is, I don't know, I ask you, what's more chomer, Chil Shabbos and Aseres HaDibris, or the minyanim, which the Lashon HaMechaber is Yishtadal Adam? And Simchas Torah, how long has Simchas Torah been around? It's not brought, not in the Bavli, not in the Yerushalmi, Sifra, Sifri, Taisefta, fairly late thing, the celebration of Simchas Torah. So when the Times writes, right, and many other papers, that we are endangering all our neighbors, millions of New Yorkers, that's their language, and their livelihood, doesn't that mimic the exact Lashon of Sam Sofer, Shaleyu Domoi Shalovit Kechavim Kal Beineim? So I ask you, what, Eva's Doichachil Shabbos? Michal Shabbos for Eva, and we're going for injunctions because of Minyanim? Somebody help me here, please. I don't know. I learned in Yeshiva. I learned Halacha for many years. Could somebody explain this to me? What am I getting wrong? Just putting the question out there. The Agudah is a fabulous organization. It's Moshe Nefesh. But sometimes something happens and you say, I just don't get it. You wring your hands and you mention it. And I'm sure we'll get a lot of comments on it. So we pointed out the change of Agudah policy about Lois Yisro, about being conspicuous, you know, keeping your head down, like Rav Eli Yishvei said, like Rav Eli Brudny, L'Havdol Ben HaChaim Chaim said. But here's another change in our Agudah policy about Eva. That here, it's seemingly they're suing the government, and they're not being chayshish. And why do I say it's a change of policy? Because the former chairman of the Agudah, before Rav Eli Yishvei, was the Baal Igros Moshe, Gaon Rav Moshe Feinstein. He was the chairman both of the Agudah and of the Mayetzes. And if you look in Igros Moshe, Chelik Beis, and Chayshe Mishpat, Siman Ayin Zayin, there's a very similar case to what's going on now. The schools in England felt that they were being treated pejoratively and that rights were being taken away from them. And they wrote to Rav Moshe asking if they could sue the government of England. And Rav Moshe's response is, and this is, I'm taking it out of the response, Shevada yesh lochosh lahatolas eva mehamem shala la Yehudim. You should be very concerned about animus. Sheze efsher shechas fishalom yavi l'toytsoyis l'toyves. It could create collateral damage and a bad effect. Baharbe inyanim, not just in this case. The ikub is a inyan redifa. It could even rise to the level of redifa. What does he mean? Well, on a simple level, can schools stop getting funding? Could a yid someplace on trial, the jurors be clouded by all the pictures of, you know, this Eva that was mutal? Could it even in employment, you go in to sign a contract, to get a deal done to an office, and they're looking at you in the yarmulke and they're saying, oh my gosh, like, is Eva here? Right, that's my ad-libbing into when he says, harbe in yonim z'in yiradifa. And then he continues, v'harbe choshishu chachomim l'chashash Eva. Kitzorich leida, he says, you must be aware, very aware, shasina li Yisrael mikala umais, hi gedayla. There's great sinner, and then he adds on, gam mimalchiyos shenoyegim b'tayva, like the United States and England. So I'm just questioning whether this change in Agudah policy is something that, you know, was mandated by higher-ups, or is it something that maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe there's a difference between the letter of Rav Moshe and the current situation. I'm just putting the question out there. Here's another communal issue. We played a clip from a Rabbi Sherwinter. He said he's the head of the Vad, he's one member of the COVID Vad HaRabbanim. And somebody in his shul, he asked me not to mention his name. He sent me an email, a number of emails. He says, and he said, the Rav spoke in Shul, I guess in response to what we said. And he said, he basically said, in Shul, masks are not mandatory. And he said, but if somebody's engaged in Torah or Tefillah, nothing bad will happen because Torah and Tefillah will be mugging and matzil. Therefore, the policy of the Shul was that hakafis should be done kali durim, but they shortened it. Only 5 minutes per hakafa, a calmer atmosphere, but no masks. And it is, and he wrote, also said in Shul, it is our utmost importance to keep the yeshivas open because it's megan amatzel, and this includes flooding the numbers with negative test results so that if they show that there's a low negativity rate, the state will allow the shuls and yeshivas. This is from Rabbi Sherwint in the Vad. So I have a question. Torah is megan umatzel when there's a avadai sakana? It says only peferish when there's no sakana. So I emailed back this Rav, and he says, well, maybe the Rav holds that COVID is not a Vaday Sakana. And therefore, since it's not a Vaday Sakana, you could be Saimach on a Tyrus Megan Amatzel. Interesting argument. So here's what I would respond to Rabbi Sherwinter. I tried to reach out to him today, but I asked my producer. He said he was very busy. Here's what I would respond to Rabbi Sherwinter. And again, I don't have an opinion on this. I'm not going to state. I'm going to ask the question and I let the Olam decide. Here's a letter from Rabbi Akiva Eger. We're publishing it online. Tuf Kuf Tzadik Aleph, which is 1831, Beis Nitzavim. Just a few weeks ago, but, you know, 1831, but Nitzavim were embracious. And he's writing it to Shlomo Gutmacher. And he writes from... Fascinating is during the cholera epidemic of 1831. He says, "Be'inyan tefila bebeis haknesses." This is the letter of Rabbi Akiva Eger. "Wadaiti einay nachain." He says, "You should only do kitais b'mseimaat erech tesvav anashim, 15 people." It's interesting. Governor Cuomo said 10 people. Rabbi Akiva Eger writes 15 people. Let me continue. I'm going to take excerpts of the letter out. "V'lochesh." And to be sure that extra people don't come, bring in a policeman, Rabbi Akiva Eger writes. And he said, if that doesn't work, tarichu muvukash zel ha government, leha magistrate, he says. Yisarvu, toiv laharich laharigirin, go to the government. Ubavade tatsliachem teskirushmi. I guess he was respected in the government. Shaloi liyois kibbutz gadol b'beis haknesses. That's one thing. Interesting. Now, certainly, Rabbi Akiva Eger knew that Torah is megin umatzel, shuls are megin umatzel, but he held halacha, it wasn't that way, because a cholera epidemic is an epidemic. And then listen to what else he writes about, you know, all the people who say, the doctors don't know anything. Think of what medicine was like in 1831. When they used a plier to extract a tooth and they used leeches on your body to cut blood for all kinds of diseases, right? Just think medicine in the 1830s, what he writes about the doctors then. Farsher shaftu haroifim lehizoyer, he says about certain foods, yarchiku kemetchave keshes kilo in machalas asuras. If the doctor says it's asa, it's like it's machalas asuras. V'lo ye'avru al devreyem af kimole nima. Don't deviate from the doctor's opinion like a thread. What else does he say? Va'oiver al tzivoy haroifim. No, I promise you, this is not a reform rabbi. It's not a modern Orthodox rabbi. It's not me. It's not the CDC. It's Rabbi Akiva Eger. Ha'oiver al tzivoy haroifim b'seder anhaga choyte la'Hashem b'ma'oid ki gadol sakanta me'isura. He says, ubefrat, interesting point, b'mokim sakana loy ula acherim, shegoyrim chas v'shalom hispashtis hachayli. Imagine if you can spread the disease, kal v'chayma. B'ir gadol avoynei minsai, koi divrei koten Akiva ben Moshe Gins. Now, Rabbi Akiva Eger certainly knew the Torah's megin amatzel, and this is what he writes. And look at his respect for the doctors, even though they were quite pagan, you know, by modern standards. So I have a kasha on this letter from this what Rabbi Sherwinter announced is the Mahalach in Lakewood from the Igris of Rabbi Akiva Eger. I don't have an answer, but nor do I have an opinion. I'm just asking what any yeshiva bacha would ask.
I also think it's interesting to note
how the Das Torah of Rabbi Ki Vega is so different. He said there should only be 15 people in the shul. Have a policeman there, have a magistrate there, and if people aren't listening, go to the regering, go to the government and tell them they're not listening. Go to Cuomo and ask him to enforce it. Rabbi Ki Vega held the enforcement is necessary. Please ask Cuomo. We are asking for an injunction against Cuomo not to do it. I would like to comment on another thing that was in the news, again in the headlines, and this is coming, a letter from Eretz Yisrael, where the Edom of Rabbi Yashiv, Lahavdol ben Achaim, great Rav Zolberstein, Chashuk Echemed, and many other halachas, was asked, should we daven for a COVID-19 patient who didn't adhere to the regulations? And you could pull it off Yeshiva World News. And Rav Zolberstein says, no. Right, you don't daven for somebody who put themselves in sakana. Why do I ask? Because this week I got a call and emails from Kiryas Yoel and oxygen concentrators. There are over 300 people in Kiryas Yoel who need oxygen. And they're raising money. Two sets of this equipment cost $13,500. Could you help with it? Can you raise? We need dozens and dozens of these, and it's pikuach nefesh. Okay, so my question is, we read from the Minchas Chinuch last week that just like there's a concept of ma'abed mamoine ladas, that there's no ibud mamoin, right? There's no mitzvah of hatzalah. Rav Zolberstein said there's no din to be daven. So I ask you, is there a mitzvah of tzedakah when they have weddings in Kiryas Yoel with 10,000 people, and you could see these online, dancing together? I mean, is a wedding an essential thing? A guy says, shul is megin a matzah. Torah is megin a matzah. Is a wedding an essential thing? So I would just ask, does that rise to the level of ma'abed atzmi ladas, of somebody whose money is certainly not, if you put his money down in middle of a wedding, $20 on each table and walk away, would there be a din? Don't, the klal in all ben adam l'chaveri is azov tazov imay, right? So much so, the Shulchan Aruch says, if you have a rich person who is very stingy, and, you know, stinginess is a disease, the halacha is that even if he's going to die, he's on death, you say, I'm sorry, you have the money to buy food, you're suffering from a disease of stinginess, azev tazev imay, Shulchan Aruch says, you don't give him the food, let him die. So I just ask you, based upon that, and based upon Rav Zolberstein's letter, how would you respond when Kiryas Yoel is asking for dozens of oxygenators at $13,500 a piece? I don't have an answer. Maybe you guys can think about it. Now, l'halacha, notwithstanding the Minchas Chinuch, and v'sayate, who goes along with the Minchas Chinuch, the Yin Yakif, the Argadol, Rabbi Rucham Fishel Perlau, Rabbi Shloim Ega, all hold that you are not matzil, somebody who placed himself in danger. On the other hand, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein and Chalkas Yoyev disagree, as well as, and the Olam Hatzala clearly is noig like Rabbi Moshe and the Chida, not like the Achrayim that argue. And you would say, so clearly if somebody's choking and he stuffed something big into his mouth, yes, I would absolutely save the person. When it comes to tzedakah, and there are so many needs, or I'll tell you more than that, if Hatzalah had to save two people, one who placed himself in danger knowingly, and one who didn't, to me the halacha would be clearly the one who didn't gets kedima, because of all the paiskim will hold that. You don't have to be matzal the other person. And additionally, when you add on to that, you know, again in the news, another wedding in Williamsburg for 10,000. It's, you know, echalti ve'echel oid, and the eva that it creates. I mean, it's true that anti-Semitism exists, but like Rav Moshe writes, do we have to kindle it? Like, do you really have to throw gasoline on the fire? And when you add those two factors together, I would say, you know, are there lots of other areas where we could give tzedakah that they're not pouring flame on fire and they're being mekayim the imay? I don't have an answer. I'm just putting the question out there. By the way, you know, we mentioned before how Eva, what you do for Eva, your Mechal Shabbos, you know, so the poskim, right, you're allowed to give a guy a Sefer Torah because of Eva. You're allowed to give a mezuzah because of Eva. Imagine giving a Sefer Torah of God because of Eva. In fact, somebody once told me a joke. He said that, you know, this rabbi and a priest were friends. So one day the priest walks on the rabbi's door and he says, you know, rabbi, you know, there was things. He says, what do you have those things on your doors? He says, the mezuzah. He says, yeah. He says, that's for shmirah, for safety. The priest says, can I have one? So the rabbi looks in the paiskim. What does he find? You know, many of the, you know, mas binyamin, etc. You're allowed to give a guy a mezuzah. So he gives him a mezuzah. He says, here. So 2 weeks later, there's a knock on the door, middle of the night, and the priest is there. And he says, "Here, here's the mezuzah back." So the rabbi looks at him. He says, "Thieves? It didn't work, thieves?" So the priest looks at him. He says, no, much worse. Now I'm getting collectors by the carload." So just an Ava joke. Okay. Now here's another point I wanted to mention. Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson, Rabbi YY Jacobson, who I have the honor of learning with, said he got a question from a woman, a very interesting question, about the yeshivas and shuls being closed. And you know, everybody knows the Gemara at the end of Brachas and Daf, I don't know, around Samach, give or take, where the Gemara says, Rabbi Akiva, the Romans made a gzera against the Torah. And Rabbi Akiva learned Torah Barabim, and they said, "How could you learn Torah Barabim? You're putting yourself at risk." So Rabbi Akiva responded with the mashal of the fox and the fish. He said, the fish were once in the water, and the fox comes to them, and he says, "Listen, you know, you're afraid of the fisherman, right? I could save you. Come up here and land. I'm a wise guy. I'll help you." So the fish laughed at him and they said, "You're the wisest of the creatures. If here in the water, which is our natural habitat, we're not safe, how are we going to be safe on land?" And the Nimshel was, Rabbi Akiva says, the Torah is our habitat. That's where we flee to be safe. If we leave that, we're unsafe. So Rabbi Y asked me, he said, so this woman asked, he said, "So how could we close yeshiva because of COVID when this is our habitat?" And I responded, and I think correctly, I said, it's a difference why you're running. Rabbi Akiva was running because the Romeim made gzeira negat Torah. They wanted to be mimoicha Torah. Whereas here, there's no gzeira against Torah. You can catch the disease in shul or in yeshiva, so you don't want to die and you don't get sick. Halacha says you should run from a city, the Rama says, when there's a plague. But it's not because... So he asked me what they ask. First thing, by the way, in the mirror, whenever you say avart, the first thing you do, I learned this my first idea, is Chavrusa looks at you and he says, Mechatesa, like, bring a raya. And I was thinking, what's a raya? And then I remembered something, I go from the mirror. Many decades ago, I had the honor of learning Bechavrusa with Rabbi Shariel, and he told me a fabulous story. He said the Chafetz Chaim, for 1 year, what the doctors told him, he can't learn Torah. So he said, he said the last day of the year, by night, Chafetz Chaim kept going out, looking to the sky. When are there going to be three stars? And finally, so the second there's three stars, he can go in and start learning. So I looked up the story, and I remember that story, and it's actually brought in Chafetz Chaim, Chayev U'Pa'alei from Moshe Yash, a very well-known sefer. And he really says, the Reifim Lahafsik im Talmudai Lamaila Mishana Le Pasach Shum Sefer. So I have a question. The doctor said he shouldn't open a sefer for a year. Rabbi Akiva said, the water is our thing. If you're not safe in the water and the Torah, you're certainly not going to be safe without it. How was the Chafetz Chaim allowed to do it for a year? He certainly knew the Gemara and Brachas. And the answer is clearly, when the Geyser Neged Torah, so leaving the Torah means you're sort of leaving the Torah. You're being cut off from the Torah. You're an agarisana, right? But here, I'm not an agarisana from the Torah, and I'm trying to get healthy. It's nothing to do with the Torah. It says, minu lepundik echas, the Chafetz Chaim's migraine headaches and Torah. There's no gzera against the Torah. So he felt avadir alado. So here, there's no gzera neged Torah. It's a gzera, the halach is shmartem oid lenafshe seichem. It so happens, if you go in there, you can get sick. That was what I answered him. I believe it's the correct answer. If any of my listeners disagree, please let me know. And the last point I wanted to make is, here's a call from, we get very many calls. We put the most of them on the air, except for the anonymous ones. Like my attitude is, if you won't put your name on something, it's not worth anything. It's like a Pashkevil. But here's a call from a very intelligent listener. Listen to what she writes. This was in response to our question is, how could the Belzer Rebbe put so many, and unfortunately I hear people are dropping like flies in bells. How could they put so many of his chassidim at risk with the Titian and the weddings, which got a lot of attention in Eretz Yisrael, right? And here's what a woman called and responded.
Hello, I just finished listening to your segment on Ger, and before that I had listened to your segment on Hashanah Rabbah, and I think you answered your own question. You asked why the Hasidic Rebbes were attending Bichasanas and davening all together and not doing the proper precautions in their shuls, and maybe it's because, as you explained, the Hasidim saved the world and there were no Litvisha left, because maybe the Rebbes felt now that people were too much home and the boys were too long out of yeshiva and they were losing them to Yiddishkeit, and maybe they felt that even if there was a safety issue, it was kedai to bring them back to the yeshiva and back to the Bismedrish and make a Varma Bikha Kafais, so that we can keep the people by the Yiddishkeit. Maybe that's one of the reasons why the Hasidic Rebbes are not coming out so against going back to shuls and schools. Thank you.
And I think that her point is, and it's a very thoughtful point, maybe I'm reading too, you know, this is how I understand it, that you don't judge sakana in a vacuum. In other words, if something's dangerous, he says, you know, I could take a walk on a street that's not dangerous or one that's dangerous. Obviously, you go on the one that's not dangerous. You go on dangerous on your Ivernissa, Shmarta Moed. But here, the Belzer Rebbe is basically saying, I know my Hasidim and the Tish, the Chasanas, these are very important to them. So it's true if they come, some will die. But if they don't come, maybe many more will die. Maybe they'll commit suicide. Maybe they'll get depressed. You know, they have tshuvas from the Ga'inim, Rishayim, Achrayim, that depression that could cause to suicide has been a pikuach nefesh. So maybe he recognizes the danger of COVID, but he's saying, I think the danger of maybe a lot of kids going off the derech if there's no tishin. I don't know exactly. And that's a valid point. And I guess, you know, you have to be a Gadol B'Yisrael to decide that the danger of, you know, many people dying from tish is less than many, many maybe dying without the tish, right? And, you know, that's a very interesting point. But what I would, though, comment on it, notwithstanding that, is part of it that's really hard to measure, and that's what Rabbi Kivega wrote in his letter. He said, what about the other people that you endanger? Which is, it could be Belzer Chassidim now, you know, will stay more, you know, be happier, etc. But they live in Yerushalayim. I mean, I just saw in the paper, 12 people in Bnei Brak died in the last few days in Yerushalayim. It's in this last week, 20-some-odd people died. I know my wife had an aunt in Bnei Brak. She just died, literally in the last few weeks, my wife's aunt died. So what about the other people? Like, how does a gadol, you know, or a big rebbe measure that effect? And I don't have an answer to that, so maybe some of you will have answers. Before we go to our guest, I would like to say one vart. This parsha speaks about the first zivug, Adam and Chava, Ezer Kenegdei. And I would like to say Shalom Bayis vart. And you know, it's Rabbeinu Shalom says he creates in Perik Beis and Bereishis the Gan Eden, and he puts in it eitz toiv lamaychel nechmad lamare, was delicious looking and beautiful. Okay, the next parasha, the Nachash comes along and he says, he tells the Isha, whispers into her ear, you could eat from anything except from that tree. And it says, she looks at the tree and she says, nechmad lamare, toiv lamaychel, etc. And she can't restrain herself and she eats from it. Well, it was beautiful and delicious before the Nachash told her that. And not only that, all the trees were beautiful and delicious. Right? He says, all the trees in Gan Eden were beautiful and delicious. Why was this tree suddenly the one she wanted to eat from? You wanted to eat something that's Toiv Lamarav and Echba Lamaychel. There's 1,000 other trees. Eat one of them. And I think the answer is, you know what's delicious about it? Because the Nachash reminded her that she wasn't allowed to eat from it. And that's a human feeling. What I can have is what's most interesting to me. There's one very popular, you know, yeshiva that everybody always tries to get into. And the Rosh Yeshiva once said, I always have 20% or 10% less seats than the amount of applicants. Right? It's a certain, you know, price is driven by scarcity. The inability to do something, you know, you put bars out, you put ropes outside, suddenly everybody wants to go where they're not invited. The tree that you can't eat, that's suddenly the one. Even though everyone is also tired of the one, that's the one that's even better. It's basically the concept of fantasy. And I think that one of the real issues of Shalom Bayis is that fantasy other mate. You know, that other boy you went out with, that other girl you went out with, the other boy that didn't want to go out with you, the other girl that's where the mazel was. That's really the one that I want. Right? It's always the other one. The grass is greener. The one that I couldn't get. The one that, whatever the reason is, I still remember years ago when I learned in Eretz Yisrael, I was married. So then the meches was a very big thing. So you were able to sell things. So when we left Eretz Yisrael, very sadly, I just couldn't afford to live anymore. So we sold everything. I put up a sign in yeshiva, you know, everything's for sale. And people came and they bought everything. One guy knocks on my door. I say, what would you like? You know, he says, I want the stuff that you don't have on the list. Like a real Polish cop. Like what's not, that's what I want, right? And Rav Lev Chassman, used to say over a fabulous, I think I've said it before, but it's a fabulous story. He said there was once a, like some hick, some hayseed he lived in, you know, who knows where. And he came to the city, just the early 1900s where Lev Chassman lived. And he had never seen anything before. So he saw a flashlight, like a searchlight. He said, what is it? He said, oh, you click a switch, the big battery, and it floods, a floodlight. He says, I must have it. How much is it? $19.20, a dollar. Okay. He takes it. Then he sees a building with a long line outside. He said, what that? It's a movie theater. What's a movie theater? It's a nickel. Go in, find out. He goes in, pays the nickel, and he's fascinated. First movie, first scene, a princess, a prince, a heroine, a bad guy. And some time in the movie, the princess is running from the bad guy, and she's hiding behind a big boulder. And the prince is trying to find her, and he can't find her. So this guy stands up in his seat, and he starts screaming, Prince, she's right over there behind the rock. He didn't, you know, obviously nothing happens. The movie doesn't talk back to him. So the people in the theater say, shh, shh. She screams again. She's right there. Save her. I'll show you. He pulls out his searchlight, turns it on, and the whole screen gets flooded with light. Well, what happens when a movie scene gets flooded with light? You can't see anything. So the people get up and they start screaming, shut the light, shut the light. He says, why? He says, over here, we can only see when the light is off. When the light is on, you see nothing. Rabbi Jacob Yosef Yitzchak told me an interesting story. He said that he was speaking, he does a lot of couples come to him. So one therapist said to him, he said, 3% when you have a couple, you know, that falls in love, right? And they get divorced and the two, you know, the Noyef and the Nayefis, whatever the case is, get married. He said only 3% of those, a tiny sum of those marriages survive. Why? He said, why 3%? He says, because they meet outside of marriage, right? He's married, she's married, they meet, and they have a wonderful time. But that wonderful time, it's not the other 97% of their life when they're going to work, going to shul, going to minyan, putting the kids on the bus, making thing, raking the leaves. It's that 3 seconds, the tiny percent of fantasy where you're not living in the real world. So what are one of the big enemies of marriages? It's you can't. It's I can't. It's that mystery. It's when the light is off, turn on the light. It all goes away. It's all a mystery. So what's the message? Let's not let our marriages, our relationships get ruined by things that they're just myths. They don't really even really exist. Marriages that get destroyed by things that never even existed. And now for our riddle of the week. So this week we'll ask two riddles. Don't eat the fruit and the loy sigubai, the isha added on, the loy sigubai pentamusun. Kaviyachol didn't say that. The isha was Moisef, Rashi, the famous right Rashi says, I sifa al tzivai, the fichach bali de groyin. Don't be Moisef. He didn't say don't touch the tree. Frek de Velt, and that's why she was Nenash. She was Moisef, she said loy sigubai. In Arachaim, in Tafmem Vav Gimel, it says, on Pesach, you're not supposed to eat chametz, but you're not supposed to touch chametz too. If chametz fell into your reshus from an adjacent Goyish-owned property, so the Shulchan Aruch says, doichfei bekana, use a stick to poke it away. And the Taz says, why? He says, only with a kana, but not with your hand. Maybe you'll come to eat from it. We add it on. Don't touch it. Just touch it. Push it with a stick, the chametz on Pesach. Mashal on Yom Kippur, the Ramah and Tafrei Yishud Bey says, you're allowed to touch the food, but the Taz brings from the Trumas Hadeshin. No. Just like in chametz, you shouldn't touch the food. And Yom Kippur too, the Magen Avraham in Sivkat and Vav brings it from the Bach, that you shouldn't, from the Ran, Rishonim, the Bach, the Ran of the, on Yom Kippur, you shouldn't touch Eichlim only if you're giving it to a Tinnik to eat. But just if you want to, you know, organize the food, can't do that, don't touch it. Why? Gzeira, demasil amechel mine. So lahalacha, and there are other places too. I'm giving you two examples. Chametz and Yom Kippur, where there's an Isra Achila, and Chazal, and an Isra Vloy Sigubai. So why was the Isha punished for saying Vloy Sigubai, Pentamusin? She was just forewarning what Chazal would ultimately do. That's riddle number one. Riddle number two, a little bit harder. Vahi era vahi voker yom hashishi. So the Mishnah says in Avos Parakeh, Mishnah Vav, Asara dvarim nivru berev Shabbos bein hashmashes. 10 things were created, Asayni shal Bilam, Eloi shal Yitzhak, v'chulu v'chulu. Shver, the Gemara in Shabbos clears a shaila. And it says, Bein Hashmashes, we don't know, it's a Safik Minayim, it's either day or it's Laila, we don't know, it's the twilight zone. So what do? We give it the Chumra of both. Shalamashal, you don't do Malacha, but it misafik, it doesn't have a din totally of Kedusha Shabbos, but this din tais for Shabbos, but you give it Chumris of both, right? So the question is, you don't know if the Gemara doesn't know if Ben Ashmashes, it calls it Safik Yayim, Safik Min Alayla. It could be Yayim, could be Laila. If it's Laila, how could you say Asvar Dvarim Nivru Ben Ashmashes? The Rabbeinu Shalom was Shavas by Yayim Ashvi. Kavi Yachal didn't do any Malacha. We're saying Vayishbais, right? Kivoy Shavas Kale Mikol Malachtai. So obviously, if he did Malacha, it's not Laila. So how could the Gemara have a Shaila? If Ben Hashmashes is Safik Yom Safik Laila, in other words, it's a tzad that it's Laila, when we see the Mizfarish Mishnah, that Les Man Depolig, that Asar Dvarim Nivru Berav Shabbos Ben Hashmashes, Ve'eluhain. That is the second riddle. First riddle, second riddle is a little bit harder. We will, you know, headlines three is going to come out, Be'ezer Hashem, in the next, few months. We have to get around to editing it and all the hard stuff. And when it comes out, whoever gets these, we're going to pick the winners of the riddles. They will be the first to receive Be'ezer Hashem B'li Neda, the first headlines three. Let's go to our guests.
Joining us from New City is the Rav of New City, Rabbi Avi Kahn. He's also the head of the Beis Din of New City, the Beis Din V'Hirav of New City. Welcome, Rabbi Avi.
Thank you. How are you, Rav David?
Baruch Hashem. So, the vaccines for COVID are limping along. Three of the biggest ones have had announced problems, and it looks at the very earliest it'll be, you know, distributed second or third quarter of next year. And in the interim, you know, businesses are closed, kids are or aren't going to school, shuls are or aren't opening, there's a fair amount of sickness and death in the community, and a possible solution is to work with the data. And the data says, as this is as published by the CDC, et cetera, that if you're under 50 years, the chances of mortality from COVID are one out of every 2,000, 5 out of 10,000, right? I'm sorry, it's even less than that. It's 1 out of 5,000. That's how I'm reading the data. Now, it's well known that in halacha, something that's a sakana of less than 1 in 1,000, we don't look at. So would it make sense to bifurcate the community and say, if you're under 50, you can go to shul, you can go to school, you can open a store, blah, blah, blah. But we have to bifurcate society. If you're over 50, where your chances are 5 out of 10,000, which are 5 out of 1,000, which already are dangerous, you know, grandparents, older people, even over 50 is not that old anymore, but they agglomerate the data as 50 to 69, which is a huge swath of time. Does it make sense to say for you halachically it would be, you know, mutter? If you're over 50 and the data says here now it's 5 out of 1,000, which is real, just dangerous, you already have to have, you can't see your grandchildren, you can't see, at least at 50%, 60%, the society should be able to function as normal. What would you say halachically to that? Assuming, obviously, you have Dina Damachusadina issues, et cetera, but would that be a solution? Like, instead of, you know, suing Cuomo or whatever, sit down and say, look, well, the government as a whole, should we bifurcate society? What would you say as a Rav and a Dayan?
So it's a very good question. Of course, a very complicated question. Number one, that you said that in halacha, we don't look at a sakana less than 1 out of 1,000. I don't know how accurate that is. I think when we're talking about other isurim, like being mechal Shabbos, something that's less than 1 out of 1,000, we don't recognize as a sakana. I don't know if anybody holds you're allowed to put yourself in a sakana of less than 1 out of 1,000 for no reason or something that the Torah doesn't consider a reason. When we're connecting and comparing it to keeping Shabbos and not keeping Shabbos, there are sources that discuss what type of sakana does it have to be. So the question is, what are we talking about? Why are people allowing themselves to get infected? What is it, just to be sane, to be normal? Because being alone is very, very harmful. A person needs to be with other people. Are we talking about going to shul? Are we talking about going to school? Are we talking about running a parnasa? What's the other side of the coin? Just to put yourself in a sakana.
So that's a very valid point, Rav. So let's go through them. You're right that all the cases that we talk about where 1 in 1,000, let's say Hatzalah, is allowed to be Mechal Shabbos if there's a sakana that is within 1 in 1,000. But if it's so remote, Hatzalah would not be allowed to go. It's based on a Magid Mishnah, Kiveg, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But your point is, well, could somebody go to an amusement park if it's a 1 in 2,000 risk? Halacha does not. But let's bifurcate it. School is a mitzvah. The Rai is, well, Talmud Torah is certainly a mitzvah, have a Torah Shabbat Rabbim. But even for work, we noted Shulchan Aruch in Aruch Haim Shin Zayin says that the teacher Parnassah is considered a mitzvah. You're allowed to hire a Rebbe for Parnassah on Shabbos, right? So Parnassah, the Ramah, quote me if I'm wrong, you're going to get me right in this, it's either in Reish Mem Gimel or Reish Mem Dalet, says at the end of the siman over there, says L'gabi Shayara on Shabbos, says you're allowed to, Parnassah is considered a mitzvah too, the Ramah says. So school would be a mitzvah.
I mean, before we jump to that, it happens to be the Vilna Gaon. It's famous in Shnei Tzaliyo, in Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph, and Peah. The Vilna Gaon says if Parnassah wouldn't be a mitzvah, you wouldn't be able to go to work. The Vilna Gaon says, Talmud Torah is a bigger mitzvah, but there's something very interesting. There's a tshuva that the Neid Yehuda wrote to somebody, a famous tshuva about hunting, where the Neid Yehuda discusses hunting, where everyone likes quoting the Neid Yehuda because he ends off that even if it would be mutter, he doesn't understand how someone from Zari Shel Avram could hunt. But the main part of the tshuva he discusses, are you allowed to put yourself in a sakana for hunting? And he writes over there, if it's for parnasa, for food, for mezonos, then you're allowed to do it. If it's for fun, he doesn't understand how somebody could do it. It means you have the same action that if there's a proper tzarech for it, you're allowed to. And if there's not, then you're not allowed to, and it becomes usur, and you're putting yourself in harm's way. So we have to go through every single step of the way. What's considered a mitzvah? What's considered a tzarech? What's the reason that we're putting ourselves in a sakana? Like we see from the Neid Yehuda, that he differentiates two people going hunting, one for parnasa, it's mutter, one for lemichya, he calls it, it's mutter, and one for fun, he writes, it's usur. So we have to go through why are we putting ourselves.
So I would look. I think it's a very valid point that you're saying. There's a body of halacha, and I remember it, but I can't give you Mara Makrimis. You probably can. That says Lamushal, a person has a right to live a normal life, even though there's an element of danger. For example, even riding in a car, there is some element of danger. And I think it would be hard to say that there's going to be any dying who says you can't drive to an amusement park because it's not necessary. So there does seem to be a body in halacha that's something that's so remote.
I think that's a very, very important discussion. I think
there is, let's say, taking a boat. No, I'm not talking about oil b'kevis, oil b'ilan. That's what Gabe Parnassah.
No. I'm talking about that. The Gemara discusses in four places about doing certain stuff that might be a sakana, but normal people do it.
Right.
And the Gemara says a famous word. The Gemara quotes the Pasuk in Tehillim, that Shemir P'soyim Hashem, Hashem watches over foolish people. That means it seems like from Chazal that a person in certain cases, and it's not always talking about Letzarech Mitzvah, the Gemara discusses taking a fruit off a tree in the middle of the night, that there might be a worm inside and biting into it. The Gemara says, you could eat it because, you know, Hashem watches over foolish people. So it seems like you're allowed to live. You're allowed to live
right,
a normal life.
And the Pais can use it. For example, getting on a boat in the Middle Ages was a dangerous thing. Right, and people crossed the Mediterranean to go to a simcha for whatever reasons they did, but that's how they lived, right? Being alive in the Middle Ages was dangerous.
true, but the question is, we have to look at those guidelines of, there are many paiskim from the Rishonim to especially to the Achronim that discuss the guidelines, and they bring their different proofs from different gemaras. What are the guidelines when somebody could rely on Shemir P'Soyim Hashem and when not? You know, Reb Moshe has his famous tshuva, of course, Binigay Smoking, that everybody likes quoting, where he discusses guidelines of Shem Reb Sam Hashem. Reb Chanan has in Kevet Shiurim. All the places can discuss Reb Moshe's guidelines are, if you don't see any imminent danger right away, and the majority of the world is doing it, then you can rely on Shem Reb Sam Hashem. And that was Reb Moshe's makom then, in that time, to write and say that smoking cannot be considered asur, because you're allowed to tell someone that you can rely on Shem Reb Sam Hashem. Now, of course, the situation changed when David Feinstein quoted that Reb Moshe's tshuva is not relevant, because now the majority of the world sees the danger. But a person is allowed to join society. A person is allowed to act normal. And even though he might be doing something foolish by acting normal, like you said, going into the sea, he could rely on a Kodesh Baruch Hu, like David HaMelech says, Shem Reb Sam Hashem. Hashem watches over even foolish people. There's interesting machlokes of the Ritva and the Mashal. Are you allowed to be machmer on Shem Reb Sam Hashem? Are you allowed to say, I don't want to rely on it, I don't want to be foolish, even when Chazal tell me I couldn't? The Ritva says it's praiseworthy for a person who doesn't rely even the Makam Mitzvah. The Ritva is referring to the Gemara, who says that it's scary to do a Bris Milah in a certain situation. And the Gemara says, if Papa holds, no, you could do the Bris Milah on Yom HaShemini because of Shem Reb Sam Hashem. And the Ritva over there says, and if you want to be Machmer, you don't have to rely, you don't have to be a Pesi, you don't have to be foolish, and you could be Machmer, and you don't have to do the Bris Yom HaShemini. The Marshal argues, and there's a big Machlokes how we actually paskin. So first, we have to know the guidelines clearly of when is a person allowed to do something foolish. Getting in a car could be considered statistically foolish, but us as Yidden, we have Shem Reb Sam Hashem. We're allowed to rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shmira. We have to have Betachin and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but certain times we're not allowed to rely on it. So ain't Simcha Alanei. So if it doesn't fit to those guidelines, that the Paiskim, which we have to pick a Paisik and see his guidelines of what he believes when a person is allowed to put himself in a Sakana, we're allowed to see, does that coincide with the way we're acting with putting ourselves in a Sakana by getting infected?
Yeah, so I would say like this, that and I'm postulating, because there's no rias one way or the other on this. So let's go back. Parnassa, schooling, shul, etc., all these things, if it's less than 1 in 1,000, it's 1 in 2,000, 1 in 3,000, would not be problematic. Now the question is doing something that's just frivolous, right? And I would postulate that part of the concept of Olam Kemenhagei Noyeg is that people have to do things for their mental health. And, Lamashal, you have the Gemara in Shabbos that says, Yumachal Shabbos for mental health. The Gemara, according, I think it's the Girs of the Bach, on the Mishnah, that you're allowed to light a candle for a chayla. So Rashi says, chaylos ruach, and I think the Bach over there says, God, which daf it is, someplace in Bamemad Likin. Bach says that it's even for a marash chayra. But this is unclear. So I agree with what you're saying, that there are two gedarim. But now let's go to, here's another question. This is to me. So first of all, would you agree that if the school or et cetera, these things, it would make sense to split society to where it's statistically, you know, dangerous, halachically 1 in 1,000, to where it's not dangerous anymore? Would you agree with that?
So I can't say 100% that I agree, and I'll explain why. I don't know, again. This is it's to me the most amazing thing that happened during this whole pandemic, is that I realized that every younger man who doesn't have a high school diploma became a professor in infection diseases. And I've been getting opinions every single day exactly what COVID does, stuff that should take years of medical school, and everybody's a perfect expert. But we definitely do see a concept of people carrying. And we definitely see the concept of people passing the disease to other people. And there's definitely stories where kids who got it, you couldn't see that they were affected by it. But they passed it along to other people. So the question is, over here, when we're dealing with society, that means you're telling society there's a certain part that's going to act normal, and the other side, you got to lock yourself away totally. Instead of saying, everybody, let's take other precautions, because we are Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelos, and we do care about society. And there are a lot of halachas in Shulchan Aruch that were given on society. The Chazon Ish talks about this beautifully. The Chazon Ish talks about most klolim of chazakus and roiv were given that we should live as a community, as we should live as a society, and not focus on every single yachid to create their own Shulchan Aruch. That's why we have the concept of loy plug. We have a lot of concepts to focus on a society and not focus on ourselves. And the question is, when do we go through different topics and say, okay, these people aren't affected, so you go have fun, you can do whatever you want. Everybody else, you know, let's go hide out. How do we deal with that?
Well, the alternative is everybody hide out. So it's you're not doing anything. You're just saying continue the current situation where grandparents, if they're responsible, are sequestering from younger people. And the younger people are being sequestered to where we say, you know, you act normally, and you just continue acting as you were till now, which is basically responsibly and either quarantined or socially distanced.
So I would say it maybe a little bit different. I would actually say let's rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Shem Ripsayim Hashem, and let's see what falls into that qualification. Those, we could be more lenient. So you mentioned you put into a box schools, shuls. I can't say I agree with that box. Shuls have its own Shulchan Aruch that is a person supposed to try to daven Tefillah B'Tzibur, like the Lashon HaTorah. And therefore, whenever you're supposed to try to do something, the Mesilas Yesharim speaks clearly in a parak that he calls Mishkal HaChasidus, that you have to make certain calculations. Then we have certain things that are considered obligations that are chayvis to do. When they're chayvis,
but it's certainly a Dvar Mitzvah, a shul. So if it's less than one in a thousand and it's not a sarkana, it's for a Dvar Mitzvah, why wouldn't it be Mutta?
So the way the Ramchal writes in Mishkal HaChasidus, I think it's such an important parak for our time. The Ramchal writes, you know, I'll give a better mashal. There's a halach in Shulchan Aruch brought down in the Hilchas Tefillah, which is based on a Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Yates, that Kala'ina Men Yishmerabah B'chol Keichai Keren Le'Gzar Dinai. Whoever screams in Men Yishmerabah, Tosha says it means Kepshuta, B'chol Keichai, you have to scream it. And the Mishnah Berurah, when he brings down that halacha after the Shulchan Aruch passes like Tosis, the Mishnah Berurah says, but if you're going to cause litzanus while you do it, you shouldn't do it. And everybody asks in the Mishnah Berurah, what do you mean? I'm keeping a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. I'm screaming. I want to get a kapara and aver I didn't. If I'm going to cause litzanus, I shouldn't do it. So I heard from my Rebbe Remeir Stern many times, the way he explained the Mishnah Berurah, is that certain things are chiyuvim to do, and certain things are mitzvahs, but they're called milsa de chasidus. No one's obligated to scream a main yishmerabah b'chol keichai, but it's a beautiful thing. Whenever you want to do something beautiful, you have to look at the parak called Mishkal HaChasidus from the Ramchal Mesilas Yesharim, where he says three qualifications. You're only allowed to be a chasid in three ways. Number one, the only reason you're doing it is to bring nachas to Hashem, if for no other reason. Number two, you checked into this action that you did that it's not going to bring any takala. And number three, you have betachin HaKadosh Baruch Hu that it's actually what he wants you to do. And if out that says the Ramchal, you're going to end up doing an Avera. And the Yitzhar is the one who's actually asking you to do this mitzvah, this chasidus. And the question is, whatever step we're taking, if it's a mitzvah that we're mechuyiv, we look at it with one lens. If it's something that could be a mitzvah, but it's a milsa de chasidus, and we have to understand, tefillah b'tzibur, is it a chayiv? Is it a milsa de chasidus? What is the qualification? Do you get an Avera when you don't daven tefillah b'tzibur? Is it like a main yishmei rabba or is it not? And then we have to put out that hat, the Mesilas Yesharim, with the sea. Are we doing it only for Hashem? Did we check that nothing, no negative thing could come out of it?
Respectfully, Rabbi Kahn, I don't think that people would consider davening with a minyan as a milsa de chasidus. I think today it's been miskabel in the olam, notwithstanding the lashon of the Mechaba Yishtadol, that davening b'tzibur is a chayv on people. People accepted it as a chayv. Klal Yisrael accepts it as Tefillah B'Tzibur is one of the ikrim of our lives. I don't think it's comparable to screaming a Men Yehesh Merabah B'chol Kaichai.
Could be. And Ramesha writes exactly like what you're saying. Ramesha is a famous tshuva. But I'm gonna say that there are other paiskim. And Gbracha speaks out from the Brisker of the way he understands Tefillah B'Tzibur. You have to understand, when I say Milsa D'Chasidus, I'm not Chas V'Shalom saying that people shouldn't run after Milsa D'Chasidus. That is our life mission, where we're noigul from Mishra Siddin every single thing. But we just have to be intellectually honest with ourselves on what is this obligation that we're doing, because we don't want to take something and Chas V'Shalom cause something wrong to happen from a mitzvah. And we have to understand, yes, Ramosha writes to Chayv. There are other places that disagree. I happen to know that when people used to ask my Rebbe Remeir Stern about davening in an airport, he used to answer them like the Mesilas Yesharim, davening with a minyan in the airport. He used to say you have to make sure that it coincides with that Mesilas Yesharim. That was his view. Other people disagree. And Eilu Ve'Eilu Devilu Kim Chayim. But we do have to be honest what every single Chayv that we're doing.
But I agree. In other words, davening in an airport could create all kinds of ill sentiment towards Eva, et cetera, towards Yidin, which is instantaneous, right? And I would say that that is a much more visible and immediate thing than doing something that is one in thousands that you could be affected. I mean, you sit down, you start davening in an airport, everybody who passes by looks at you like, what's going on over here? Whereas you're being nichnas into something that's one in thousands, I think that's different than, I think that, you know, if you're under 50, davening in shul is much different than... Much so less apparent than immediate, much less. Let's move past this. You disagree?
I just want. No. I don't really disagree. I just want to clarify. I don't know. I agree it's different and it might have a different outcome, but I think the focus has to be the same. When a person is going to daven at the airport, they have to think, are they going to make a Kiddush Hashem? When a person is going to go daven in a shul, he has to think. It could be your answer is going to be yes. You're allowed to risk the one, something that's less than 1 out of 1,000. That could be your answer, but the question still exists. The question, just because we have a different answer, doesn't mean that the question is not there.
My only comment is I don't think that davening b'tzibur today would be considered a milsa de chassidus to most people.
Okay,
that's what I'm saying. But Rabbi Stern may disagree. So let me move. I want to just pause it again. Let me go back to. I think that if it's statistically less than 1 in 1,000, that crosses the pikuach nefesh. You're rightfully pointing out it doesn't mean you should be able to do everything. But I would argue that a dvar mitzvah, you certainly should be allowed to. And arguably, even not a dvar mitzvah, where any mental health issues would be involved too. But now I want to move to the next question. Now let's move to over 50, or let's say over 60. Well, let's say it's a reasonable danger. It's 1 in 500, right? Where halachically it does have a pikuach nefesh, or it's even 1 in a few hundred, where it's real, right? I think that when you're over 70, for example, it becomes 5 in 1,000, 1 in 200, right, which is a real risk. But here's the, so you would say, no, you're not allowed to. But here's the other side of it. When people can't function normally, it's not without a price. Businesses collapse. What happens when businesses collapse? Marriages collapse. Suicide insurers. Mental health issues happen. So if you look at it in a vacuum and you ask a Rav, are you allowed to do something that's less than 1 in 1,000, that is greater than a 1 in 1,000 risk insurers, no, it's pikuach nefesh. But now you have to say societally, if we don't do it, well, the guy may not go to work because the risk is a few in 1,000, but he may kill himself, or his kid may kill himself, or get, you know, all kinds of mental health issues, as we know, are very alive in our community. And there'll be divorce and this. So how do we look at those risks? And if we would get an actuary, he would say, you know what? When people's parnassas collapse, when they get locked up together, blah, 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 the death rate rises over there to 5 in 1,000. So at that point, do we say, listen, the CDC is saying the risk of death is 2 in 1,000, so it's hakadosh nefashos, not to go out. But on the other hand, the risk of death from not going out and all its increment things, even though they're sort of not linear, are much greater than that. Do we weigh those two against each other? How would you look at that as a Rav?
So I'll tell you 100% we have to weigh the two. I could tell you since the virus started, the amount of issues that have magnified in Klal Yisrael have been tremendous. The amount of suicides, relapse on addiction, the amount of people who had issues and they were able to see those issues much more in a clearer way because they were home and not busy with a lot of things, therefore that caused a lot of issues to magnify, have been terrible. And yes, people are struggling tremendously. There's very little support out there and people are struggling with mental health, and it is a sakonis nefashos, 100%, and it has to be taken into the equation. What the answer should be in those cases, I don't know if I'm 100% sure what risk is more important, but it has to be taken into the equation. Mental health is so important. We know it now more than ever that if somebody is not 100% healthy, it is sakonis nefashos. And if businesses are collapsing and people's shalom biases are collapsing, in l'cha sakonis nefashos gadol mizeh. But we have to weigh it. We have to weigh it, and we have to make our proper determination, and it should be taken in. I'm not saying therefore because of mental health that everybody should just do whatever they want and be frivolous and run around, you know, not being protected. But it has to be taken into the equation.
For example, over 70, over 80, it's 30% death rate. So my question would, which is huge. So my question would be: is halachically, do we look at every step? We say under 50, less than 1 in 1,000. Okay, 50 to 60, it's 3 in 1,000. Well, let's get an analyst in here and say, what is the suicide death rate, etc., for people? If it's greater than that, we weigh which one is better. If it's over 80, I think it would be where it's 30% death rate. I think it would be very hard to make the argument that if you're over 80 and you isolate, et cetera, that the suicide rate is going to be 30%. So my question would be is, do we weigh at each level what is, you know, schari behefseidei, and if the country were run, if it could be done halachically, would we indeed paskin And then my next question is, can a Rav even paskin this? I mean, to paskin the nefashis, we say it in the beginning of Sanhedrin, you need a bez and shol chav gimel, lechadin imaminis. Like, would you as a Rav be comfortable? A guy comes to you and he says, listen, my rate is 2 in 1,000. I'm between 50 and 60, so halachically, I'm not allowed to do it. But I could tell you, if my business closes, my chances of suicide are 15%, somebody in my family. Would you paskin such a shayla?
So it's a very, very good question. I'm getting such shaylas every single day. And I want to be very, very honest and transparent. This has been the most difficult period of answering such questions.
Give us an example of a question you would get that's sort of similar along these lines.
I've had questions from people who told me that they were living with people who back in the same house with people who have been abusing them, and now they have to be back in the same house quarantined with those people. If they leave the house, they're not allowed back into their house. They'll be stuck onto the street. They won't have an option. Where do they go? Do they live in that same house? Do they not live in that same house? I've had questions with spouses who wanted to leave each other during this period because they managed to stay away from each other for 25 years. But now that they have to be in the same house, over starting from Pesach time, people who were relapsing on addiction because they couldn't get to their support groups on time, especially over Yom Tovim and Shabbos, where people used to walk to support groups, which it's so important that they have the support they need. All these questions have been very, very, very complicated questions. There was a video that was released during Pesach time, maybe right before Pesach, with myself, with Reb David Cohn, telling people that they could go on Zoom and attend meetings, and the feedback we got, the emails that I received criticizing paskening for an oilam publicly was very, very interesting to see. You know, someone, a certain Rav, sent me an email: how could you publicize Shat Psak publicly? This is a private Psak. And I always enjoy quoting the famous Yerushalmi, that Yerushalmi says, the Hamishal, if someone gets asked a question about the Kuach Nefashis, they're a disgusting person. And the Truma Sadeshan, the Beis Yosef, brings it down and says, you have to talk about the Kuach Nefashis publicly. Then nobody asks such a question. I told this Rav, I don't want to be a Maguna Dika person. What do you want from me? I want to talk about this publicly, but we're a very sensitive nation, Kali Yisrael. And there's always machleksim, there always has been, but people take it very, very personal. When people take the concept of aim day essay and shove, it's very, very personal. And we can't understand how somebody could have a different view. And there's been tremendous amount of questions of dealing with mamish pekuach nefashis. Even as simple as, I want to spend Yom Tov Pesach, shalom bayis issues. My kala wants to go to the family side, but my in-laws don't wear masks or daven in the shul. I want to daven with them, I don't want to daven with them. Even in my community, I try to keep to the guidelines of the CDC. I have social distancing, the shul, and masks. People have stopped davening in shul because of that. I had wives who texted me, my husband's not going to minyan because he's not willing to come to shul without a mask. And with a mask. And for me, it's a big shiloh. Am I allowed to do such a thing? Am I allowed to? These are complicated shilohs.
What was the gist of Reb David Cohn's heter that got everybody upset?
David Cohn's heter was, I really don't understand what it got, why it got people upset, but his heter was that if your mental health professional says you need to join a support group, you're allowed to go on to Zoom on Yom Tov Shabbos to join a support group. Yeah.
There is Reb David Cohn. Was it al pikuach nefesh? Did he held it was because
those are the words he mentioned it as pikuach nefesh. He spoke. He said he started with the Reb Chaim. He quoted Reb Chaim's name, and he said Reb Chaim always used to say that he's not makel on Shabbos and Yom Kippur. He's just machmer on the inyan of pikuach nefesh. And he said, therefore, I'm saying that 100%, you're allowed to appear for your support groups online on the Zoom, which was the
so he would have Zoom is a drabanan, but he would have been matter it for a deraisa too. You sense?
So the way he over there said, he said everyone should do a chino to always make it. He didn't discuss that Zoom is drabanan. That even though I happen to agree with you, he seemed to be approaching the opinion that Zoom is deraisa, and he said over there why he's doing it, because he doesn't want people just to go on Zoom stamazoi, and he said therefore it should be done with a shinoi to make it, to take out the words he used, to take it out of the realm of a deraisa, and he wanted to make it drabanan. And then I got on to explain how a person could do a bishina, but if it's an emergency, of course a person could get on directly right away. And, you know, it's very interesting that we know that the Gemara tells us, the Rambam brings it down, that hazaris hariza meshubach, you should be, you know, zaris in yanei pekuach nefesh. And it's praiseworthy to be zaris. The Tashbat in Siman Ches says that people think that the mitzvah of pikuach nefesh is saving a person. He says that's loy samal dam riecha. You have to make sure you save people. The inyan pikuach nefesh is to be oisik in pikuach nefesh and not care about the outcome. That's the mitzvah of a chay b'ham of hazar zareizim reshuvach of the oisik in it. And Rav Shlomo Zalman or Rav Vozner write that if someone's oisik pikuach nefesh and it's not matzliach, it's not pshat they're a tov advar mitzvah if they make a mistake. It's the mitzvah itself. It's the mitzvah itself, and they give nafkaminus lahalacha. We're supposed to be Isaac, the Rebbeinu Shleil, and the Torah really cares about Klal Yisrael's lives and quality of life. And even getting sick, which you didn't discuss, it's not so partial that a person's allowed to get them sick. The Rambam paskens clearly that you're not allowed to put yourself in a sakana just to get sick. You're not allowed to hurt yourself. You're not allowed to do a chavala on yourself. And the Rambam explains, and the Ritvaz explains, that the reason why Haidaz Baldin doesn't work on Knossos, on getting on Malkus, is because a person is not in charge of their own body. Their body belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And how could you accept upon yourself to hurt your own body? Money, you have the right to do that.
You don't own your own money. Yeah.
So you don't own your own body. So even we're discussing pukuch nefashis. We didn't discuss even a person getting sick. There are thousands of people who I've spoken to who tell me about the bittul Torah that caused them for getting sick, or you know, getting sick is also not so pashut. Even if it's not going to bring to pukuch nefashis, I'm not even discussing that we don't even know the long term ramifications of getting sick with COVID, how it's going to affect us in 3-4 years from now or 10 years from now. Just like cigarettes, they didn't know the long term ramifications. Nobody smoked a cigarette and died on the spot.
Right.
So there's a lot. So therefore, now you want to know what guidelines should be put in place, how it should be done when we have different parts of Klal Yisrael, different age groups and different people. You know, that's when you deal with a large population, and I, you know, a government gets together or a bezin gets together. You're right. That's when you need a bezin of Chav Gimel to get together and say what are going to be the guidelines we're going to make without a yitzim and a klal, and we're going to have a light plug. What are the guidelines going to be? And, you know, right now we have a Dino of Mechusa Dino, and it's very possible that Api Alocha, that we're Mechuyiv to follow it. It's very possible. I didn't find yet a reason why we're not Mechuyiv. Even if it's politically motivated, I haven't found the reason why this doesn't go into a Dino of Mechusa Dino.
Yeah, it's not going against the Halacha in any way that we know of.
Yeah. I'll tell you more. We love, the Pasuk in Mishlei says, the Lev Malachim Biyad Hashem. You know, maybe we have to believe the Lev Malachim Biyad Hashem. That maybe these...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that we have to believe that the Sarim and the Malachim are maybe somehow doing their Ratzon of their Rebbeinu Shleil.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for your time. It's always a pleasure to have you on with us.
Thank you very much for having me on. Hatzlacha Rabba.
Kol tov, bye-bye.
That we're mechuyev to follow it. It's very possible. I didn't find yet a reason why we're not mechuyev. Even if it's politically motivated, I haven't found the reason why this doesn't go into a din lo mechusa dino.
Yeah, it's not going against the halacha in any way that we know of.
Yeah. I'll tell you more. We love, the pasuk in Mishlei says, the Lev Malachim Biyad Hashem. You know, maybe we have to believe the Lev Malachim Biyad Hashem. That maybe these...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that we have to believe that the Sarim and the Malachim are maybe somehow doing their Ratzon of their Rebbeinu Shleil.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for your time. It's always a pleasure to have you on with us.
Thank you very much for having me on. Hatzlacha Rabba.
Kol tov, bye-bye.